This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, welcome to the show. It's a run episode today. We've got 21 tangible run training tips to help you get the most out of all those training miles or kilometers. And I've got two TriDot team members joining to run us through all of these tips. Our first guest joining us today is Matt Bach. Matt is an accomplished athlete with an Ironman Maryland victory and 72nd overall finish in Kona on his resume. He worked on Wall Street as a trader and portfolio manager for 9 years, earned his MBA from Temple University, worked in marketing at UCAN for 2.5 years before coming on board to lead TriDot's marketing efforts. Now, Matt, before you were a top-level triathlete, you were a pure runner. Are you excited to kind of share some run training knowledge with us today?
Definitely. Running is where I started. It's where I grew to love endurance sports, so I'm thrilled to be on here to talk about run.
Next up is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, how's it going?
It's going really well. Thank you. I had a fantastic run earlier today, so I'm really looking forward to talking more about running on this episode.
I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll approach the show like any other workout. We'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Every year, the major running shoe brands release their updated shoe lineup and hope their offerings will please the feet of runners worldwide. Within these annual releases, there are usually new creations, existing models that received a total overhaul, and/or crowd favorites that underwent slight changes. Typically, this process moves the running shoe market forward with new exciting updates, but the dark side of this phenomenon occurs when an athlete's favorite shoe is ruined by a change or is cut from the brand's lineup entirely. Matt, Elizabeth, if you could bring back a shoe model that has long been retired or has been replaced by a less than adequate updated version, which shoe would you revive? Elizabeth James, what are you picking here?
It made me giggle when you said the dark side of this phenomenon, because the dark side here would be the brands that have the shoes that no longer are in stock that you loved. And for me, that would be the Saucony Mirage 4. I love that pair of shoes. In fact, I still own that pair of shoes, even though they probably should be in the trash. I used those for many, many track sessions. They were such a great pair. I mean, this shoe construction itself was fantastic. Just 4mm offset, great for me, having a lower drop for some of the speed work sessions. They were black and pink, which I absolutely love. Some of my favorite colors there. And as I said, I still have this pair of shoes. They're only good for about going to the grocery store, way too worn out to actually do any training in, but ones that I just can't seem to part with. And I wish that they were still available.
So do they still have the Saucony Mirage? Are they on like model 12 or something and you just don't like it anymore? Or is that lineup just gone entirely?
It's gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sad day. RIP to your Saucony Mirage 4. I'm terribly sorry that happened to you.
Saucony? Who are you?
Saucony. My bad.
You don't run in Sauconys.
It's just one of those words that I always mispronounce, right? I mean, athletes love pointing it out on the show. I get a lot of flack for the way I say triathlon instead of triathlon. So it's just one of those things. We're doing some backyard renovations and I say pergola instead of pergola. And so I keep getting flack from that one from my wife. But anyway, so my apologies to all the Saucony fans out there for that one. But every runner who has had this happen to them, Like, they know exactly what we're talking about, right? Because you just fall in love with a shoe, and all of a sudden that new update comes out, you buy it, you put it on your foot, and you can just tell, like, this is not the same shoe I just had. This is not the same shoe I fell in love with. So, Elizabeth, so sorry that happened to you. With the Saucony Mirage 4, Matt Bach, what is a shoe that you kind of have these same feelings towards?
Yeah, for me, it's Zoot. So I was sponsored by Zoot for a couple of years and grew to love their shoes. And the Zoot Ultra Race is the shoe that I would race in. I loved it. It was like a neon green, really easy to spot me. My wife loved it because anytime she was spectating, it was really easy to find me. It also had those boa laces on it. It was one of the earliest shoes, I think, to have that on the shoe. And I loved it. I also have some sort of nostalgic, you know, attachment to it, too, because I won Ironman Maryland in a pair of those. And the other great feature that I loved was that it has great drainage, which is good when you're pouring water, ice over yourself constantly. In my case, I'm also peeing myself periodically. So I was bummed when Zoot stopped making that shoe. But they stopped making shoes entirely, actually, I think for a while. And then they came back and started making shoes again. But I don't think they've brought back the Zoot Ultra Race, or at least not in the form that it is now, or that it was back then. So that was kind of a bummer for me. I wish I still had that shoe to run in. And then also back in high school, I noticed that every year they changed. I was running in ASICS a lot, and the whole team was running in ASICS. And we'd run in the 2060s back then. And then they came out with the 2070s, and it was that marginal change from one year to the next. And everybody was bummed. You couldn't find the 2060s anymore. So that was also kind of a frustrating experience back then, because they just changed the shoes so frequently. And with just even relatively small changes, but just like you say, you grow to love a shoe and then they get rid of it and you're like, ah, it's such a bummer.
Yeah. And Matt, the one that happened to me with that is the Brooks Pure Flow 2. So when I first moved to Texas from Florida, I was a tennis player in Florida. And so I was just kind of looking for a way to stay in shape. I was looking to get into running and, did what a new runner does. I went down to the local Luke's Locker, running shoe store, and the guy put me on a treadmill and watched my stride and said, oh, here's two shoes that would be great for you. And one of them was the Brooks Pure Flow 1. And I spent $100 on them, which at the time I thought was an enormous amount of money for a pair of running shoes. But I really liked the Brooks Pure Flow 1. Back when I was just a novice runner, I put a lot of miles in those. Got the Brooks Pure Flow 2, liked it even better. I was like, oh, this is great. This shoe is amazing. Put in even more miles in those. Really, it's really the shoe that helped me fall in love with running, just as a recreational runner before as a triathlete. And then the Brooks Pure Flow 3 came out. And to me, just what you just said, Matt, it was a very slight change. It was similar, but had just enough of a difference that the magic was gone for me. And I'm sure a lot of people liked that shoe. I just didn't. And now I'm not even sure if that shoe even exists at all. And I don't run in Brooks personally anymore. But that's the one I would revive, the Brooks Pure Flow 2. If they revived it today, I would go, online. I would buy two of them. I might not run in them, might not train in them, but I would definitely use those as my around town shoe because I really did like them. So, hey guys, like we said, we know a lot of you have probably gone through this at some point in your running career. So we want to hear from you. What is a running shoe that is no longer on the market, or maybe it's been updated and you just feel like the magic is gone? What's a shoe model that if you could revive it, you would totally do so? Go to the I Am Trout Facebook group, find, today's post asking this question, and let us know what that shoe model is for you.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We recently had sports scientist Andy Blow from Precision Hydration on the show and learned that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to hydration because everyone loses a different amount of salt in their sweat. As someone who sweats a lot, I wanted to get a better understanding of how much salt I lose in my sweat, so I took their online sweat test. And after taking the test, I received a personalized hydration plan and was recommended their strongest electrolyte drink, PH 1500, which is 3 times stronger than most sports drinks out there. It's been a game changer for me, particularly in hot conditions. If you've ever struggled with hydration issues like dehydration or cramping during long and hot sessions, it's worth checking out precisionhydration.com. You can take their free online sweat test and find out which pH strength matches how you sweat, and then get 10% off your order with the code TRIDOT10. To learn more, you can even book a free 20-minute video consultation with them to ask any questions you have about hydration and fueling, or even to discuss your own strategy for an upcoming race. So again, that's precisionhydration.com and use the coupon code TRIDOT10 to get 10% off your electrolytes and fuel. Everyone has a different relationship with running, and whether you're fast or slow, love it or hate it, you're a graceful gazelle or an awkward aardvark, if you're going to make it to the triathlon finish line, you're going to have to run your way there. We run a pretty good amount in our training, and today we'll hear 21 tips to help us get the most out of our miles. Now, for this episode, I consulted with many of the coaches in the TriDot family to gather as many helpful run training tips as I could. And today, Matt, Elizabeth, and I will be talking through them one by one. So, Coach Elizabeth James, what is our very first run training tip for today?
First tip is proper running shoes. And I mean, really, you know, kind of proper equipment in general, but especially running shoes. As much as I love my Converse, that is not what you want to be training in. So know your footfall. Do you pronate? Do you supinate? And then get the shoes that are best for you. And then only use them for running. Run in your running shoes. Don't use them for other activities and then replace them as recommended.
Yeah, no, I like that tip. And I what I like about the note of run in your running shoes is, you know, once I retire a pair of running shoes, you know, I've put enough miles in them, you know, the foam's kind of broken down. That's when I'll kind of transition them into my gym workout shoe. Mm-hmm. But definitely Same. Don't use your prime time running shoes at the gym while that cushion has its life still in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Same strategy for me too. I just shift them over and now they're my yard work shoes or my walking around town
there
shoes.
There you go.
Yeah. And touching on that, replace them as recommended. In high school, I had a few pairs of shoes that I got over 1,000 miles. On a pair of shoes. I mean, the recommendations are typically what, 300 to 500 miles, sometimes
yeah,
a little
less. 3 to 5. Yeah.
Now, I mean, we would wear that badge with pride that we had a pair of shoes that got over 1,000 miles, but that only lasted for so long until we started finding that we were just getting Ooh. Injured by doing that. We were like, wow, that was dumb. So that stopped pretty quickly, especially once Coach found out. He's like, yeah, that's not a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things with making sure that you have the proper equipment on your feet. And I really do encourage athletes to go and, you know, go to a running specific store when they are looking for their specific pair of running shoes. I mean, in terms of proper running shoe fit too, run shoes are going to run a little bit different in terms of sizing than other shoes. So like for me, you know, if I'm buying a pair of dress shoes, I'm going to be like an 8 or an 8.5. I buy a 9.5 in my running shoes. So don't Wow. be afraid to size up. Just the fit is a little bit different. Your feet are going to swell when you run. You know, I like to have about a thumb's width between the end of the longest toe and the end of the shoe. And as long as the heel isn't slipping, it's better to go with a little bit of that larger size.
Yep. No, all great points. I love running shoes. I actually have a couple running shoe kind of review YouTube channels that I just enjoy watching their content, whether I need a new pair of running shoes or not. And so, yeah, I mean, keep your eyes on what's on the market. There's some great shoes out there. Make sure that if you put 1,000 miles in like Matt Baca used to, then you're doing it wrong. You need to be replacing those a little bit more consistently. So, Coach Matt Bach.
So yeah, tip number two, pace it right. You know, pace your run, your training right, not just your races. So don't run, you know, don't just run easy. Don't just run hard. Don't run in the middle. Do the prescribed pacing. So it all ties back to the TriDot philosophy, doing the right training right. So whatever is in your plan for the day, make sure that you're doing it as prescribed, hitting those paces on the easy days, hitting those paces on the hard days. You're going to get a higher TRANX score that way, which is, you know, hopefully encouraging you to hit that training the right way, because that polarization of that training is going to get you just running that much faster. I've fallen into that yeah. pitfall before of running that mid-zone.
Yep.
It doesn't work. I just plateaued.
I think a lot of runners have. And one of the things that really helps me is setting up my running watch to show the metrics that I want to focus on for that session. So, for example, if it's an aerobic run and I'm focused on heart rate, and I mean, especially in the summer here where my ego gets in the way, where I look at my pace and go, oh my gosh, like I know I need to keep my heart rate down, but it seems so slow. I'll set my watch so that I'm only looking at heart rate. Yeah. You know, this is important for training and racing. Make sure that you have the ability to see, you know, the data screen set up in a way where you don't have to be scrolling through a bunch of pages and you can really just focus on the metrics that matter for that particular training session.
And kind of to that point, I'll kind of introduce our run training tip number three. Don't dread the track or the treadmill. I know a lot of people see the track and the treadmill as being somewhat mind-numbing, somewhat boring, and honestly, they can be. But man, the track and the treadmill is a great controlled environment to just really help you keep the hard stuff hard and keep the easy stuff easy. There's no question about, you know, what your pace is on a track. I personally love going down to the track for my speed work, and I saw so much improvement in my 5K time, in my high-end speed, and in the power of my running when I started doing more sessions down at the track, because it really just helped me know, okay, my zone 4 pace is X, and by golly, when you're just running circles on a track, you don't have red lights getting in your way, you don't have cracks on the sidewalk getting in your way, you don't have varying terrain getting in your way. You can really nail those speed work sessions, and so I really recommend athletes do the hard stuff on a treadmill, on the track, and maybe for those zone 2 sessions, those sessions that are longer stamina sessions, you can kind of vary it a little bit more. But you know, so don't be afraid to take your training down there. Don't be afraid to kind of lean into the how mind numbing and predictable those environments can be, because they can really help you nail that speed work. And they say speed work makes the dream work, isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely so. And I mean, I've come to just love the track and the treadmill for the precision of hitting those prescribed workouts.
So, Matt Bach, let's hear from you on tip number 4.
Tip number 4, more doesn't always equal more. So just don't just go out and run more miles. It doesn't necessarily mean better running. I think a lot of us get tricked into this idea that if you run more, you're going to get faster, because when you first start in the sport, you go from, let's say, 5 miles a week to running 10 miles a week to running 15 miles a week, and you're getting better as you're increasing that volume, but there's diminishing returns there. And at some point, they even tip over. And I've actually written articles on this. I think I titled it When More Equals Less, or When More Is Less.
Mm, wow.
And it's something that really resonates with me, because during the 2013 season, very much was just trying to get as many miles in as possible, both on the bike and the run, and trying to just pack in as much of that training as possible to see if I would get better. And it had worked in the past, but at some point that doesn't continue to work. So if you're one of those athletes who is pretty serious about the sport, you're up there into that 10, 15 hours a week type range, like, know that there is a threshold for each person, and given your stress in your life and your life situation, your recovery situation, that there's a tipping point where more does not equal more. More may actually equal less, or it equals nothing. And so you're just wasting your time. So TriDot is amazing in that way, in that there's a focus on high quality over quantity. It's not just jamming a bunch of hours down you into your schedule. So it all ties back, of course, down to that doing the right training right philosophy as well. So let TriDot tell you what to do, go out, do it, and know that more doesn't always equal more.
Yeah, no, I definitely, when I came on the TriDot, I saw immediate benefit in, instead of focusing just on how many miles I was running, focusing on how I was running those miles, right? And, you know, going out and running a certain amount of miles just in a zone 3 pace, you know, which is what I was doing before I found TriDot, did very little to improve me in my results and my capabilities. But suddenly you know, okay, for certain intervals I'm running in zone 4 and zone 5, certain intervals I'm running in zone 2, and just knowing how to run those miles, you know, helps you get more, you know, better gains, you know, better increased fitness out of less miles than when you just go out and run a ton of miles. So, you know, we at TriDot, we're very famously not for accumulation metrics. More is not always better. And Matt, that's a great point here, particularly when it comes to the run. So something I've heard Coach Jeff Rain say many times is it's not always about beating yesterday. So yesterday, if you were capable of running 10 miles, that doesn't mean today you need to go out and run 12. It's not about beating yesterday. It's about doing the right session for today. So, Coach Elizabeth James, what is our run training tip number 5?
So number 5 is going to be to incorporate run drills and strength training. So kind of those, you know, accessory type workouts.
Yes.
Not
absolutely.
Not just the run session itself, but the things that really support that. So working on your running form, your economy of movement, you know, thinking lift, lift, lift as you run, you know, keeping your cadence high, making sure that you're staying more upright, you're not over leaning. So really just kind of thinking about the things that support the run.
Yep. And we've talked on the podcast a couple times, you know, even somewhat recently, on just how much there's benefit in incorporating run drills. It's not just something to get your muscles primed for a run workout. It actually does help your run form. It can help your economy. There's been studies into that. We actually, on the I Am Trot Facebook group, there's a conversation going on a few weeks back where an athlete had asked about just stretching and hey, what are people out there doing to kind of warm up your muscles before you stretch, or do you just stretch while you're cold? I think we all know it's better to stretch a warm muscle as opposed to a cold muscle. And so something that I've been doing lately, actually, just talking about incorporating run drills into your weekly training, is I will go out in the driveway and do just 4, 5, 6 minutes of run drills to kind of warm up my legs before doing like an evening stretch session, if that makes sense. And it's a way of kind of getting that into my routine a little bit more than just on run days, but it also primes my body for those stretching sessions. So lots of ways to do it, but a ton of benefit to your run form and incorporating run drills and doing some strength training to really, you know, keep your legs in a healthy place. So Elizabeth, that was such a great tip, and you did such a great job presenting it. Let's actually go back to you for tip number six.
Well, I'm glad that I get to present number six here. So tip number six is it's okay to walk. This does not make you any less of a runner. And I think that's, you know, something that maybe even new runners struggle with a little bit at first. They're like, oh, like I'm not a runner. Like I'm just jogging a little bit and then I need to take a walk break. And then I'll go again and I need to take a walk break. You are still a runner. It's okay. Embrace the walk. Incorporated as part of it. There are many, many successful runners that actually use a run-walk protocol. And I'll be the first to admit that when I qualified for Kona, I walked a portion of the hill in the marathon where I qualified for Kona. You know, there's points where the walk is beneficial. And for me in that race day, I knew that I needed to get my heart rate back under control in order to be able to put in a strong couple miles at the end. So it's okay to walk in both training and racing. Doesn't make you less of a runner.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, there's a lot of trot out athletes and trot out coaches that leverage a run walk strategy on race day. You know, they'll plan on doing a 9-to-1 ratio or an 8-to-2 minute ratio of you know, running to walking, and they've practiced that, and they found in their practice training sessions that they're actually faster that way than they are just going out and straight running. There's a certain hill in Ironman Waco, my next A race coming up, that there's a certain hill that we're going to go over 3 times. That's a pretty steep hill. I already can tell you I'm going to be walking that hill every single time, you know, just strategically. So Elizabeth, it's good to hear that if it works for pro triathlete Elizabeth James, it can work for me in Ironman Waco. So Matt Bach, what is training tip number 7?
Training tip number 7 is fuel your runs. So fueling, I mean, it's a rabbit hole that we could go down for hours. We have whole episodes on that with Dr. Krista Austin that you can go back and listen to. But for this tip specifically, I'm going to try to keep it succinct. So I'll make one specific point, which is that you should fuel most of your runs, your training runs. So I typically have one serving of UKN Energy before my runs. My runs are typically between 45 minutes, maybe up to an hour and a half. You know, maybe I'll have a longer run that's even longer than an hour and a half, but most of them are between 45 minutes and an hour and a half. So one serving does the job. And that serving of UKN Energy is like an insurance policy that prevents any low energy issues from getting in the way of me nailing my run. I rarely do fasted training. It might be something that I just do a few times a month. And there are more and more studies coming out now on women athletes, and they're finding that you shouldn't do fasted training. It can have some impact on your health and your hormones. So particularly for women, make sure that you're not doing your training fasted. And if for whatever reason you just have a fascination with doing fasted training and you think that there's some benefit there, make sure that it's supervised by somebody who knows what they're talking about, a registered sports dietitian who can help you with that.
Yeah, Matt, I'm glad you brought this up. I know it's an area that you're very passionate about. I know it's an area you're very knowledgeable about. I use a serving of UKN Energy before any runs as well, or bike sessions even. And you know, if it's first thing in the morning, it's usually a cup of coffee and a UKN almond butter bar. Or if it's in the afternoon, it's usually a UKN Edge gel. And then once a run goes over an hour, I'll usually take a Precision Hydration pH 30 gel with me on that run, pop that about halfway through, just to make sure I can keep the energy up all the way through the duration of the workout. You really want to get all the fitness gains you can out of it by having energy. I'll go into number 8. I'm looking at tip number 8. I mentioned earlier, I am passionate about running shoes. I just enjoy looking at new running shoes. I see pretty new running shoes hit the market all the time that I'm like, ooh, that's nice and shiny. I want to buy it. And I have to make myself just keep a certain number in my closet. My wife will harass me if I have too many running shoes at one time. But the tip here, tip number 8, is to consider having a rotation of running shoes. I think a lot of athletes just have, you know, that one go-to shoe in their closet, and they'll use it for all of their training and maybe even their racing as well. If for budget, that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do, that's all good. But if you have the means, I strongly recommend having a rotation of running shoes. Did you know that running shoes need rest just like we do? The actual foam that is used in the cushioning of your running shoes, it needs a break. It needs a chance to rebound. Most shoe manufacturers recommend 24 hours in between runs. Now, with Tri Dot Training, you know, you often have days in between runs anyway, but sometimes you don't. And that foam will lose some of its maximum effectiveness if it hasn't had a chance to rebound from your last run. And so it's good to have a couple different shoes that you can bounce around in between to let the foam have a chance to take a break. And one thing I like about having a shoe rotation, I personally have 3 different running shoes that I do my training in. It just kind of, it lets your legs get used to different types of shoes. Shoes have different drops that are made to do different things. Elizabeth, you referenced your favorite shoe that's been retired, had a 4-millimeter drop. My track workout shoe, the Skechers Razor 3, has a 4-millimeter drop. It's great for track workouts. But for those kind of longer, slower zone 2 days, I have the New Balance Fuel Cell Propel, which has a lot more cushioning and a lot more drop. And that's just a little bit more friendlier to my legs for those slower zone 2 runs. And so there's just different shoes that can help you meet certain workout session needs. Now, it is a little bit more money up front since you're buying multiple shoes typically to kind of round out a good shoe rotation. But once you have 2 or 3 shoes in your rotation, those shoes are going to last you longer because you're not just putting all of your miles in the same shoe day in, day out. So that's tip number 8. Coach Elizabeth James, what is tip number 9?
So tip number 9 has to do with music on the run. And if you like listening to music, I would encourage you to make some kind of purposeful playlists. I know one of the things that I use some running playlists for is to help with my cadence. This is something that I've worked on for a number of years. And instead of just listening to a metronome, I was able to make some playlists with a specific kind of beat per minute and kind of have my footfall go with the music, and the beat of the music there was much better than just listening to a constant beeping, but also helped me kind of stay focused on some of the goals that I had for those sessions. Music can also be a great motivator. Sometimes there are days where I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm just dragging a little bit. I know I need to do this run. A good playlist can get me out the door, help me knock it out. So a couple different things that you can do if you like listening to music on your runs. I mean, consider making those playlists purposeful.
Nope, that's very cool. And I've certainly seen on Spotify, on Apple Music, whatever folks are using, you know, folks have done this just like that. And if you, in the search menu, punch in a certain beat per minute, and you know that's kind of the cadence you want to hold, you know, there will be playlists that come up that are going to match the beats per minute that you are looking for. So really good tip there, Elizabeth. Matt Bach, let's move on to number 10.
Yeah, tip number 10. My next one, it's a tangential tip here, actually. Use headphones at the right times. So for me, there's a couple main considerations here. One is safety. So for instance, if you're on your bike and you're going through a suburban neighborhood or even an urban neighborhood, where if you have headphones in your ears, you might not hear things that could save your life or save someone else's life, or you know, just prevent injury in general. So for safety reasons, maybe use those headphones when you're on the trainer or when you're in a place where the riding is very safe. I typically do not use headphones at all when I'm on the bike because of the safety purpose, the safety reason. If I'm using headphones, it might be during a run because it's a little bit safer there. You're not moving as fast. There's not as, you know, everything isn't as fast moving. And I'm often running in places that are pretty, you know, trails or on paths or roads that are not as heavily trafficked. So there's not as much of a safety concern there. But the other thing is on the social end of things, some people, like one of my biggest pet peeves is when people come out and join me for a run. Maybe it's just me and one other person, and they have headphones in their ears. I'm like, come on here. I'm here to chat with you. Let's talk. Let's, you know, the whole social aspect of running like that. It's like you develop some amazing friendships because of the time that you spend out on a trail talking about everything and talking about nothing all at the same time.
Yeah, very true.
And if they've got headphones in their ears, I don't know what they're listening to. Are they listening to the Tri-Dot podcast? Are they listening to music? Are they listening to what? I don't know. Are they listening to nothing? A lot of the time I can't figure it out. I don't know whether they're actually listening to me and having a conversation with me or not. So that bothers me. So definitely leave the headphones home if you're going to be going to a social thing. If you're running by yourself, then you know, maybe bring out the headphones and that's fine. But use them at the right times, please.
It's almost like, Matt, you become the third wheel on a running date between them and their headphones.
Right.
And
right.
And nobody likes being the third wheel. So yeah,
what am
don't,
I, chop
don't make
liver?
Your running.
You like your podcast better than me? You like listen to Andrew Harley in your ear better than talking to me. I can understand that maybe.
I am fascinating, Matt. I am quite charming. So I'll move us into tip number 11. Tip number 11 is vary your running route. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, heading to the treadmill, maybe for speed sessions, the treadmill or the track. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, you can run outside, you can run up and down hills. As much as I love the track and as much as I love the mind-numbing predictability of the track, I still make sure I'm varying where I'm doing my workouts. You know, I'll make myself try some new trails. I'll make myself go up, you know, on some undulating terrain. I'll make myself do things that aren't the same way. I'm also a creature habit. And so I like running the treadmill in the same way. The routes outside of my neighborhood that take me through neighborhoods nearby, I like running the same way. But something that Coach Jeff Raines pointed out to me one time, he was like, you know, don't just run the same route the same way every time. Don't run the same direction on the on the track every single time, because what happens is, you know, sidewalks have slants, roads have slants. You know, if you're running a treadmill clockwise, that turn is always in the same direction, and you can really put a lot of stress on one side of your body over the other if you do all of your runs the same direction every single time. And so it's good to vary if you're on a track. Particularly a longer track session, it's good to kind of add some variety to the, you know, just switch up which direction you're going, you know, to really work the muscles on both sides of the legs equally. If you have a favorite route around your neighborhood, you know, if you do it one way today, do it the other way, you know, tomorrow, and just to kind of help even out the stress you're putting on both sides of your body. That's a Coach Jeff Raines next level tip that he's given to me that I make myself implement because I'm a creature of habit and I don't like to, but it's really, really good for injury prevention. And it keeps your runs fresh, honestly.
And I got a couple notes to add on that one. On the track, make sure that if you're running the opposite direction, that there's not a lot of people on the track. Because if there's a whole bunch of people, then you're not being very, very, you know, you're being a little rude if you're doing that. And people will give you funny looks. Plus, you might end up running into people. So that's not good. So usually I do that. I also employ that tactic. And I run the opposite direction on my reps. So if I'm doing 6x1K on the track, I'll run three of them in one direction and three of them the other. And it kind of spices it up a little bit too. But I can only do that if there's not a lot of people on the track. The other thing too about the track is, you know, fun fact is that in horse racing, there's actually a very, you know, well-documented and serious problem where horses develop a syndrome where they have a curved spine because they're always running in the same direction on the track. So now those are horses, but you can sort of develop the same kind of thing in a human, because if you're running in the same direction all the time, you're kind of developing certain muscles and certain, you know, ligaments and tendons and things are adapting and conditioning themselves to be able to run in that direction. So if you run the other direction, you're going to find that it's a little bit harder to run the opposite direction on the track. And that's a good thing in that you like to notice, because you want to correct that. I mean, you always want to be a balanced individual so that you don't develop issues like a curved spine, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, you mentioned like, you know, doing six intervals and three one way, three the other way. It also helps me keep track of which interval I'm on. I'll do like my odds one way, the evens the other way. Sometimes I'm like, gosh, which one was I on if I'm always running the same direction? So that helps me keep track of where I am in the workout too.
Yep. Nope. All great points. Elizabeth James, let's move into run training tip number 12.
Tip number 12 is don't neglect the post-session recovery. And I mean, really, this goes with, you know, your warm up and cool down for the set itself, but then also what you're doing immediately after that set. So make sure that you do have time to cool down, to really take care of the muscles, to refuel. All of those things are going to make sure that you get the gains that you just worked really hard for in the session. So don't neglect that post-session recovery.
Yep. No, can't emphasize that enough. You know, that's where that's where you consolidate the gains that you just worked so hard for out there on your feet. So, hey, Elizabeth, this is going to be a little deja vu.
Okay.
You did so well presenting tip number 12. Let's also have you present tip number 13.
All right. We're just kind of going two in a row here for this episode. So yeah, let's take a look at number 13. Number 13 is going to be to invest in like some comfort items that are going to prevent chafing or blisters. I mean, I've talked on the podcast before about how much I like Sport Slick and how I'll use that. I mean, not just for a wetsuit, but even more so for my runs, both like around the armpits, on the thighs, prevent the chafing. Sometimes I'll use it under my socks. That's really helpful. So yeah, also you know, using that Sport Slick on my feet to prevent blisters. And another thing is the socks. Okay. Don't wear cotton socks. The cotton is going to stretch a little bit as it gets wet and you're sweating more, and this is going to cause some friction and blisters. So invest in quality pair of socks.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And I just like, you know, investing in quality apparel in general. I mean, quality apparel, it really does help with the comfort. It's going to help with your temperature regulation. You know, that nice, you know, moisture wicking, breathable, running singlet is going to help you regulate your temperature a lot better than, you know, that maybe cheaper off brand, you know, t-shirt. And it's going to help prevent chafing, just like you said. So, you know, just say no to cotton. It may be the fabric of our lives, but it is terrible for run apparel. And we can't emphasize that enough. I'm somebody, and this is kind of a personal thing, but I'm not a big fan of the brief liners in men's running shorts. So I've kind of figured out which brands do the compression liners really well. So I'm a big fan of a company called Run Brooklyn, that produces it's called the Wally B running short that has kind of a built-in compression liner. Nathan, the company that does kind of hydration packs, also does apparel, and they put out some really good running shorts that have a compression liner. So I say that to say, learn what you like, learn what your preferences are, you know, learn what helps you not chafe and what helps you be comfortable over all the miles, and then invest in that quality apparel over apparel that isn't quite as quality, and just a note of cotton, right? Matt Bach, let's go to tip number 14.
Yeah, next tip, use some tools to help you pace. So perceived effort is, you know, people use that, have used that since, you know, the beginning of running. But we now have a bunch of different tools that can help you pace better. So you can use grade adjusted pace, which in your watch, it'll tell you afterwards, but you can actually also set it as a field in your watch so that it'll tell you in real time. Power. That's becoming a bigger and bigger thing in the running space. And if you have power for running, then you can use that to help monitor your pace. And I've always used heart rate. So I generally wear a heart rate strap when I'm out on my runs, and it helps me manage my effort up and down on the hills. So if it's a short, punchy hill, then your heart rate is going to be a little bit of a lag on it, and it may not help you very much. But if it's a longer, gradual hill or a longer, steep hill, whatever it may be, if it's longer, then heart rate will start climbing if you continue to try to, say, run at the same pace up a hill. So if you're trying not to do that, right, if you're supposed to be doing a zone 2 run, then use your heart rate to help manage your pace up the hills. If you're in a race scenario, then you might not want to be blitzing up that hill at, you know, Ironman Lake Placid or Ironman Wisconsin or something. You might know it's a hilly course. If you're blitzing up each of the hills, it's kind of like you're burning a match on each one of those. So you want to pace it a little bit more evenly. Unless you're basically, you know, finishing the race, and, you know, at that point you go ahead and burn the matches because you're just charging for the finish line. But if you've got a lot of miles to go, then try to pace it a little bit more evenly. That way you're not building up lactic acid, you're not kicking yourself out of your sort of zone 2 fat burning zones, and it'll help you have a better pacing strategy overall and a better time in the end.
Yeah, now that I have the Strive power meter, obviously that really helps me pace correctly, you know, going up and down the hills. I talked about that a little bit earlier, but before I had that, I mean, grade adjusted pace was amazing. You know, to the Garmin watch, you can download a Garmin kind of app that'll show you grade adjusted pace. It responds just a little bit slower than the Stride Power Meter does. It would take it a few seconds to register that I was going uphill or downhill. But it was really helpful in helping me run the correct pace uphill and downhill. And so for folks who maybe don't have the Power Meter yet, you know, a free app download, a free Garmin download of their grade adjusted pace to your watch can really help you manage that effort correctly. Another service announcement I'll give here is this is where TriDot's eNorm can really help you out as well. No one else in the triathlon training industry is doing this, where before you head outside for that session, you can see what your pace is supposed to be based on the environmental conditions outside. It's such a clutch feature in making sure you're doing the right training right. And so I always remind athletes, you know, before you head outdoors, your TriDot training is going to default to a certain time in the morning. So if you're running at that certain time, great. But if not, make sure you're updating what time you're doing your run, because if it's heated up at all, if it's cooled down at all, it's going to update your paces and let you know what pace you should be aiming for. Elizabeth, let's go to tip number 15.
So tip number 15, kind of interesting that you chose me for this one, because everybody knows that the swim is not necessarily my forte, especially when we're comparing it to the run, but...
But you're still faster than me, so good on you.
But 15 here is going to be to swim, or, I mean, use other cross training. But I have found that particularly swimming has really helped my run. I mean, swimming builds a great aerobic engine. It can provide fantastic recovery. There's a lot of benefits to the cross training and particularly the swimming that have shown up in my run ability and my run progress. So I would say, you know, that cross training and particularly the swimming, great benefits there.
And there's a lot of anecdotes too, of swimming being just great cross training, and also, you know, people a lot of the time realize it when they're injured. And one of these anecdotes I'm thinking of is Tim O'Donnell in 2019 leading into Kona, when he had an amazing performance, was second overall, broke 8 hours, incredible performance. Well, he had a broken foot basically like a handful of weeks before Kona, but he used aqua jogging and lots of regular swimming in order to keep his fitness levels high. And he barely did any running, and then he still had the best race of his career. So that cross training piece is clutch. And if you want to even try aqua jogging, which, you know, kind of a form of swimming / running, then you could even try implementing that, because the running really, you know, takes a toll on the body sometimes. But if you can use that weightless atmosphere of water or weightless environment of water, then, you know, that'll really help you out.
Yeah, I've seen several athletes that train with TriDot. They'll add a marathon to their their RaceX and to their race calendar, and they're confused when TriDot actually adds a swim to their weekly routine. So a typical weekly routine for most TriDot athletes has two swims, and so a lot of athletes, they add a marathon and it adds a third swim, and they post to the group, you know, hey, is this right? Why is it going to have me swim three times a week? When I'm training for a marathon, and it's exactly that. It helps you build the endurance. It helps your body build the stamina in an activity that is not load bearing. So running obviously carries a little bit more injury risk. And so you can help build the stamina you need for that road marathon, by getting in the pool an extra time during the week. And so, like you said, Matt, tons of anecdotal evidence for swimming being a great cross training exercise to help your running. And as triathletes, you know, we need to be in the pool anyway. So just embrace it. Mm-hmm. I'll introduce tip number 16, because I'm passionate about this one. It's just be visible to vehicles. That there's a lot of great sidewalks. There's a lot of great city paths that you can run. But really think about how visible you are. And I say this because I have had more close encounters with vehicles on my outdoor runs than I have when I'm outdoors on a bike. I haven't had too many close passes. I haven't had too many encounters where I felt unsafe out riding on my bike. I've had so many times at intersections, at turn-ins, park trails, where cars, they just aren't looking for runners. They're looking for other vehicles. They're looking for cyclists. They're just not, no one intentionally, right, trying to hit me, but just people that just plain flat out didn't see you. So think about what apparel you're wearing, particularly at night, You know, really go with things that have reflective accents. A lot of companies sell things that intentionally have reflective accents or have bright colors that, will light up in vehicle headlights at night. So be thinking about those. There's a lot of things you can purchase, like high-vis running vests or light-up vests or headlamps or lights that clip onto your shoes or your belt. Just a variety of things out there that can really help you, run safely. I always like to run against traffic. They tell you to ride and cycle with traffic and to run against traffic. It just helps traffic notice you that much better. I personally have a little kind of hand torch, light flashlight that I use, when I run at night, and it just, if I can tell a car doesn't see me and I'm approaching an intersection and they're approaching the intersection, I can kind of flash that light towards them and make sure that they see me. So just take care of yourself and make sure that whatever you're doing out there, you're visible to the vehicles that are going to be around you.
You just used the word torch. Are you British?
I'm not British. I'm not, but I think the model, it's a Nathan branded, and I think it's actually called their hand
torch.
Oh, wow. So kudos to them. Maybe they have some British influence. Or maybe, you know what, I just want to give a shout out to our British athletes and be as cool as they are with some of my lingo. So I'm just trying to fit in with the cool kids over in Europe.
As you were just talking on this tip 16, I just got to throw in bonus tip. So tip 16A or 16B, whatever you want to call it, with making eye contact if you're going to cross in front of a car. So if you're running along on the left side of the road, like you're supposed to be doing, and then you're about to cross over, let's say somebody stopped at a stop sign, make eye contact with that person. And if you don't, run behind the car instead. That's a common practice that I've put in place to make sure that I don't run in front of a car that is not looking for me or not seeing me and just decides to put pedal to the metal and run me over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even a brief wave, like if you wave and they wave back, I mean, that's an easy way to know, okay, yeah, they saw me, they're acknowledging me. Mm-hmm.
Matt Bach, your 16B was so good. I want you to present tip 17.
Oh, I would be happy to. So try new routes. This is one that I'm really passionate about exploring, using running as a way to explore. And I think I even said the same exact tip on the bike one because I love to explore. So it's just varying things, right? I mean, training sometimes can be a bit monotonous. It can be a little bit tough. So I love running with people for that reason and to try to mix things up and keep it spicy. But one other way to keep it spicy is to try new routes. So what I do a lot is I look on a map, I'll find some green, right? Like on Google Maps, you look for some green, which means that it's a park or some sort of reservation or something. And I'll run to it and I'll run in it and then I'll run home. And maybe it's a park I've never explored before, or maybe I'll even link a few of them together. I'll say, okay, I'm going to run to this green one and I'll run to that green one and then I'll run home. So that way I'm kind of just exploring new areas. And the green is a good way to try to identify some good new areas, because often the green stuff on the maps tends to be the best running areas that don't have as many people, cars, all that sorts of stuff. It has more greenery and nice pathways and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I like to, when I'm in a new place, when I'm in a new city, I'll actually pull up on Strava, either the Strava heat map or the Strava segments for that area, because it can kind of show you where are people that live there doing their running or their cycling. Mm-hmm. When we were at Ironman Coeur d'Alene fairly recently, John Mayfield and I went for a run. That's exactly what we did. We just pulled up on Strava. Okay, where are their running segments? Because if there's a running segment that's been created, chances are a lot of runners are running that direction. So nice little tool there as well. Elizabeth James, what is tip 18?
So tip 18, we've kind of touched on a little bit of this earlier, but is be mindful of your form and what you are trying to improve. So, I mean, we've talked about run drills. I talked a little bit about, my cadence and how I use playlists to do that. But really what we want to kind of focus in on here on tip number 18 is being intentional. So having a goal for your runs. And, having a goal even beyond doing the session as prescribed. So within doing the right training right, then think about what is it in my run form that I'm trying to improve? Are you working on your stride? Are you working on your cadence? Are you working on your arm carriage? Are you working on your breathing? So inside of doing the right training right, now what are those opportunities of improvement for you? Being mindful of your form and where you have the biggest opportunity for improvement on those sessions as well.
Just yesterday, I was actually thinking about that idea while I was running, because during the Olympics, they were making comments. The commentators were making statements about Katie Zafiris and Flora Duffy, and how Flora Duffy was very light on her feet. and the feet were, the ground contact was very short. And then Katie Zafiris was looking a little bit more sluggish, like the legs were heavy, and you could see that the feet were on the ground a little bit longer. So I was trying to think about that myself in my own training. You know, let's quick feet, like have them kind of hit the ground, bounce off the ground, you know, quickly, and not try to let them linger too long.
Yeah, Flora Duffy looked fantastic on that run course.
So smooth.
Great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, great run for her.
Oh, so cool to see.
I'll do tip number 19. We're in the home stretch here, people. We all have one more tip left to share. I'm going to do tip 19, and it's injury prevention. I'm an athlete that is easily injured, particularly with the run, so I kind of have to be careful with it. So if you know you're an injury-prone athlete, you know, just kind of constantly just be paying attention to how your body feels. You know, kind of learn the difference for yourself on, you know, what's the line between general soreness and potentially an injury coming on. And we've talked to BJ Leeper on the podcast a little bit about this, and we'll have more conversations with him about this. But, you know, know when it's okay to kind of push yourself and get those fitness gains and when you might need to lay off. You know, you can leverage tools like an elliptical, you know, or like we talked a little bit about earlier, aqua jogging, like Tim O'Donnell did in his prep to Kona, to get some workouts in without the physical stress if need be. Kind of my personal rule of thumb, if I kind of feel a little tweak or a niggle coming on, I'll monitor it for a run or two. And if it is getting worse or if it's still there, that might be where I consider skipping a session or two, or, you know, easing off the intensity for a session or two to see if it goes away. And after 4, 5, 6 runs in a row of it still being there, still being a problem, I might increase how much time I'm taking off. But just kind of learn for yourself, you know, what are kind of those problem spots? You can stay ahead of them with things like the running drills and stretching properly. But just be mindful of injuries. I mean, running is a load bearing sport. It can really get your body in trouble really quickly if you're not paying attention to the spots you know are problematic for you. Matt Bach, your last tip for us today. What is tip number 20?
Yeah, my final tip, take the tangents on race day. You'll save yourself some time there. If anybody knows Dick Beardsley, so famous marathon runner from back in the early 1980s, give or take. And I remember I heard him speak one time, very inspirational story, really good public speaker. So if you ever have a chance to listen to him speak, you should. But one of the stories that he told was about, I think it was a marathon in Japan. Maybe it was a Tokyo marathon or something. And I think he was running on the line in the middle of the marathon course, thinking that that was the course he was supposed to run. But then he was horrified by the person who was just ahead of him. I think they were in first and second. The person who was just ahead of him, who was taking the tangents, he was horrified by it because he thought that he was cheating. But it turns out that there are certain limitations to where you're supposed to run. You're not supposed to run up on the sidewalks or cross through people's yards and things like that. But the road, take the tangents on the road because the road is fair game. So that line in the middle, he discovered later on, was actually measured out to 26.2 miles. But but technically he could run the tangents like this other guy was, and he might actually end up running only, let's say, 26.1 or 26.0 miles, which actually could save you quite a bit of time. So know that on race day for your triathlons, for maybe even your road races as well, your running races, that you can take those tangents and that you should. And you should practice it in training as well where you can. It's a little bit tougher in training because you usually have cars on the roads and things, but a lot of the time I'll practice doing that if it's early in the morning. I like to do some of my training at 5:36 in the morning out on the roads when maybe there aren't that many cars. And so I can actually practice taking the tangents on in training. But it's key on race day, of course, training not so much.
Yep, a lot of park paths where you can practice that, and you know, being mindful of it in your training just kind of increases the odds of you being mindful of it on race day. And we say it a lot. It sounds like a no-brainer. It sounds like an easy thing to do. But you'll be surprised how many Ironman or half Ironmans we are out there cheering for triathlon athletes. And you see people all the time on turns just taking the long way around, and because they're just mentally in a place where they're not thinking about it. And the more you think about it in your training, the more likely you are to think about it on race day and save yourself the time. Coach Elizabeth James, let's shut down the main set with run training tip number 21. What do you have for us?
All right. Our final tip and my final tip for today is to kind of grin and bear it. I mean, really just thinking about smiling through your workouts, having a positive mindset. It's amazing what a smile can do for yourself, for other runners around you. Really just kind of going in with that attitude of gratitude and the opportunity to be out there and to, you know, push our bodies to do fantastic things.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
I love sharing stories from the Tryout family on our podcast, and we have a really meaningful one today from athlete Holly Wick. On our website, tryout.com/podcast, you can click on Leave Us a Voicemail and record your own voice for our show. You can ask a question. You can tell us about your tri club. You can tell us about a recent race or maybe a training breakthrough you've had lately. Anything remotely multi-sport is on the table, and we love hearing from y'all and getting athlete experiences in the sport on the show. Now, Holly listened to episode 56. It was called Triathletes on the Run, Nailing Your Next Half or Full Marathon. And on that episode, we asked you to hear your marathon stories. So Holly went to the website, she recorded her story, and I can't wait for y'all to hear this one. Holly, thanks so much for sharing. Here is Holly Wick.
Hi, Andrew. My name is Holly Wick. I recently listened to and very much enjoyed the Triathletes on the Run podcast, where you invited us to submit marathon stories. I have a story I'd like to share, not just about a marathon, but a marathoner, a badass warrior marathoner named Colleen. I met Colleen in 2010 at a Mothers of Preschoolers event. I had complimented her on her headscarf, and she candidly told me she was undergoing treatment for breast cancer. She went on to tell me about her family, the teaching career she had given up to homeschool her five boys, and her cancer discovery and treatment, which included chemo, radiation, and a bilateral mastectomy. I was in awe of her strength, tenacity, humor, and heart. We became instant friends. Around the time I started running to lose weight, Colleen started running to increase her lung capacity and to help her body recover from illness and surgery. We joined a local women's running group called the Running Hotties, which became our support group. We would train, laugh, race, encourage, and pray for each other. Unfortunately, I moved out of state and wasn't able to be with Colleen for her first marathon at Chicago in 2014, which, by the way, she accomplished after beating cancer a second time. But she was with me at my first marathon in Virginia Beach the following year. She had just finished the half marathon herself and should have been at the after party, but instead she was waiting for me on the marathon course, cheering me on, taking pictures, and handing me pretzels. When Colleen was diagnosed with cancer a third time in 2016, her immediate reaction was to sign up for the Chicago Marathon again. This time, four running hotties registered with her. In her Facebook post about her diagnosis, Colleen wrote, "My oncologist said fighting metastatic cancer is like a marathon, and my way of winning a marathon is going to Chicago with my friends." The five of us began training from three different states. Although it started well, as the marathon approached, it became clear that Colleen's ongoing cancer treatments and her compromised immune system would prevent her from traveling to and completing the event. The Running Hotties swung into action. Shirts were made, supplies were ordered, shenanigans were planned. I won't name the Chicago Marathon employee who bent the rules at packet pickup so we could procure Colleen's race packet, bib, and shirt. But when we took our places at the starting corral, wearing our custom race shirts with Running Hotties Do Chicago on the front and Team Colleen on the back, Colleen was with us in the form of a life-size blow-up doll with her face glued on, all dressed and geared for running. We carried Colleen for 26.2 miles, taking pictures of her with spectators, volunteers, first responders, mile markers, Chinese dragons, even Elvis. In our finish line photo, Colleen's face is radiant above her finisher's medal, surrounded by her friends. She was the only one of us who wasn't sore the next day. After returning from the race, we lovingly boxed up Colleen's race swag, shirts, the blow-up doll, Chicago souvenirs, and a photo album documenting the entire adventure. Colleen's reaction when she received it, "I feel so loved. I feel like I was there because I was. Once I am cleared to start running again, I will log 26.2 miles and won't wear the medal until then." Colleen passed away in July of 2019 at 42 years old. Her celebration of life was epic. Mementos of her life well-lived were on display, including those of her final marathon with her friends. She never did run 26.2 miles again, at least not here on Earth, but she finished her life's race with the same grace, strength, and perseverance we all knew her for, that exemplify all that we aspire to be as athletes. On behalf of the Running Hotties, thank you for letting me tell you about our friend Colleen. P.S. The day that I am submitting this, May 14, 2021, is Colleen's 50th birthday. I actually wrote this story 3 days ago before realizing it would soon be her birthday. But seeing her birthday on the calendar right as I was so deeply immersed in her story was a sign to me that God was pleased with what I was doing. I know many of you on staff at TriDot are praying folks who appreciate a good God tie-in. So if you would, please pray with me for Colleen's family, her husband Jason, and her 5 boys, Griffin, Brayton, Dawson, Ronan, and Weston, who are now ages 20, 17, 16, 15, and 13, respectively. I'm sure they're all missing Colleen today, as I am. I pray that their memory of Colleen would draw them all closer to God. Thanks again for all you do at TriDot and Try for Him. May the Lord bless you and keep you all.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Matt Bach and Elizabeth James for hitting us with some super useful run training tips. Shout out to Precision Hydration for partnering with us on today's episode. Head to precisionhydration.com to learn how you sweat and to check out their hydration and fueling options. Use code TRIDOT10 for 10% off your purchase. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to TRIDOT.com/podcast and let us know what you're thinking. We'll do it again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.